Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you until 3 o'clock today. And I want to go straight over to Aileen Crean O'Brien now. Good afternoon, Aileen.
Good afternoon, Katie.
You're down there in lovely Kinmare, Aileen.
Absolutely, yeah. The jewel in the crown.
And I love this, what we're going to talk about now, because we were remarking, we were talking about this in the office today, saying right across Europe this time of year, there's a lot of protests against over-tourism. And, you know, if you're in places like the Canaries or Mallorca was the latest one I saw, or even in Barcelona, tourists are maybe made to feel a little unwelcome in those places. Not so in Kinmare, Aileen.
No, that's right. Yeah, we prefer to use the carrot opposed to the stick. So, actually, it was my husband who saw an article. They're doing it in Copenhagen. So it's to incentivize the visitors or the tourists into the town to bring their sustainability ethos with them on holidays. And if they get involved with the tidy towns of a Tuesday night, then there's they get rewarded for their green deeds. And, you know, get discounted tickets for activities in town or a free cup of coffee or something like that. It's in its infancy. So there's just a few businesses involved at the moment. But in the future, we imagine that there'll be a lot more.
It's such a good idea. I'm kind of amazed that others haven't come up with it. But as you say, it's Copenhagen was where you saw it on the go first, was it?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, my husband saw it there. They tried it there for a month last year, and I think they're trying it again this year. So, you know, like we have this amazing committee in Kinmare in the Tidy Towns, and they're all volunteers, and they just do fantastic work. And you know yourself, in a small business, you don't have time to volunteer on the Tuesday night to litter pick or paint or whatever. So this was an opportunity for us to give something back to the town. Actually, for the last couple of years, we've been inviting the committee into our brewery, Tom Crean Brewery, and giving them a treat at Christmas.
All right, yeah. And sure, I suppose I should say your name there. People will know Crean O'Brien, a very, very, very famous name, not just in Kerry. Your granddad, was Tom Crean?
Yeah, yeah. My mum's dad, yeah. My mum was Eileen. Yeah.
Famous explorer, of course. And you have that well-known brewery now, the Tom Crean Brewery there in Kinmare. So as you say, you were feeling a bit guilty that you didn't have the time to take part in the Tidy Towns Committee. So this is your way of basically contributing.
Yeah, it's an opportunity for all small businesses, or, you know, because in a small business, you don't have the time, you know, you're running a race. And so and they do such fantastic work. So this is the way of helping them, you know. So if they get more volunteers, then, you know, it's a win-win for everybody.
So how will it actually work then? So say I want to go to Kinmare. I'm going to have a couple of hours, you know, to spare during the day. How do I offer my services and what would I be asked to do?
Well, at the moment, as I said, it's in its infancy. And the night, you'd have to slot in with the Tidy Towns group. At the moment, they meet on a Tuesday at 7 p.m. in the square. So it'll have to be that night. You know, they're all volunteers.
So I could go litter picking, basically, with the committee.
Yeah, whatever's on the agenda for that night. It could be litter picking, could be hoeing. I suppose they wouldn't ask you to paint, maintain the flowers, you know. Right. You'd have to bring your paint here on holidays. Right.
At the end of my night's work, what will I get a voucher or what will I get?
Yeah, yeah, there's a choice of what businesses are involved. So then you choose one. So like we give a free brewery tour, which means then you have to stay about, hang about until Saturday because our brewery tour is only on Saturday. So it kind of encourages long-term stays as well. Mm-hmm. Are the Kenmare boat tours involved? I think Bean and Betch is involved. I'm not sure exactly now who else is involved at the moment. But we want like tourism to be a force for positive change, not an environmental burden, I suppose.
And the other thing is, if you have, you know, kids with you on holidays, I'm sure they'd love that. You know, it's an adventure, isn't it?
Yeah. It would be, yeah. And it's a learning process for the kids. And it's good to give. Like, we were on holidays in Malaysia years ago, and there was a big storm, and I used to go swimming every morning. We were on this island in Pancor. And so we turned up, and the beach was covered in rubbish. And Bill says, yeah, well, you can't go swimming there. And I said, no. So then we went to the shop and we bought a roll of black bags, and we picked up at least 11 or 12, filled at least 11 or 12 bags of rubbish, and went back again the next day. And then the locals started helping us, you know, so you can encourage people to change as well.
So hang on with me, Aileen, would you? I want to bring in Tommy. Good afternoon.
Hello, how are you?
Tommy, you're in Silver Mines there in
That's
Tip.
Correct.
And
North Tip, yes.
In North Tip. And you're on the Tidy Towns committee there.
I am indeed. I'm on a long time now, I think. It could be 28 years, 27 years anyway.
And what drew you to it, Tommy?
Well, I'm from the area, I suppose. And, you know, we always had kind of a sense of pride about our locality anyway. And I suppose really what activated a lot of us one time, I suppose, there was a kind of a proposed dump for our area, you know, and we objected to that in a big scale. So it probably enhanced us then to force us to kind of get on more with the Tidy Towns, but it was always there, you know. So and we're a very historical village, you know, for kind of mining. So there's always people come inquiring about the mining and our history, and the village is small enough.
Tommy, I believe, because this is something that has come up before, people find the most extraordinary things when they're litter picking or, you know, river cleaning or all the things that Tidy Towns groups tend to have to do. And you have an extraordinary story of a recent find.
That's right, fish heads. Bundle of fish heads, you know, really. And what sort of fish they were now, they're probably like sea trout of some sort. We brought the local authority into it, you know, and they actually took them away to check them out. But as soon as they were gone, didn't another bag full appear, you know, so we don't understand that. And they were left on a nature trail where children and young families would be playing and walking around. So
and
they had to come off the road.
Was it just like a plastic bag full of the heads of fishes?
Well, the first lot were just left, were exposed, just left open, you know, on the just off the footpath. And the next lot were in the plastic bag. So someone had to put water their way to do that. We don't understand that because, you know, there wouldn't be any major rivers in our area, you know, so we have little streams and small rivers, but not the type of fish that was found there.
And it's a complete mystery as to where these fish heads came from.
It's a mystery to us anyway. So, but I'd say they had to put themselves out to leave them in. You know, I mean, they could have tipped on any side of the road and no one would notice, but on the nature trails, you know, and they had to come in a couple of, good few, maybe 10 metres off the road to tip them on the side of the grass, you know. So
extraordinary. I wonder if anyone out there has any idea where those fish heads came from. I would love to hear it.
Somebody's fond of fish.
Tommy, thank you for that. I want to bring in Mary now. Mary, good afternoon.
Hello. Hello there.
Mary, you had a fairly unusual find as well out with your Tidy Towns committee.
Yes, I cooked turkey. It was thrown into the side of the road.
Sorry. Is this last Christmas?
Well, it was about a couple of years ago now.
But it was it before or after the Christmas?
It was after the Christmas, yes.
And you had a full cooked turkey, was it?
A full cooked turkey. It was in tin foil and it was in a plastic bag as well. It was just thrown into the ditch. It was actually my dog that was with me sniffed it out because we were just getting the rubbish out from the side of the road. out from the side, you know, the ditches. It's a country road.
And was was it nicely cooked? Nice and...
It looked, and it looked fresh as well, like it wasn't smelly or anything. I'd say it was only about a day old. You know, it was quite fresh.
How many pounds would you say?
Oh my gosh. It was quite big. I tried to do a family, you know, it wasn't a small little one at all. It's quite big.
Oh, God, would you love to know the story behind how that cooked turkey and tinfoil ended up at the side of the road?
Yes, I would. I really love to know how it happened. And it's a country road. I mean, it's not as if there'd be a lot of different people coming up and down that way. So they must have actually gone out of their way to do it, I think. You know?
Well, it must have been thrown out from a moving vehicle or something, was it? Did somebody have to drive there to dump it?
Well, it would have to. Yes, yes. Yeah,
that
it would.
Is extraordinary. Now, what did you do with it?
My dog was very happy. he had some of it, but I had to actually bin the rest of it because it was too much. But
weren't worried about your dog eating it, that there might have been something in it, no?
I doubt it. No, it was, like I said, it was perfectly cooked.
he had
a little bit.
It is incredible what people
will throw away.
And obviously, it's terrible that they would dump such stuff like that at the side of the road. Yeah. But intriguing all the same, from fish heads to cooked full turkeys. it's extraordinary. I think I still have... Aileen, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here, yeah.
Had you ever heard the likes of this in Kinmare?
No, I didn't. No.
We should warn the tourists when they're coming on board of what they might have in their way. Are you hoping that this will take off, Aileen, your idea to bring the tourists in to...
I think it will. I mean, the more businesses that get involved, the more we'd expect more... once people become aware of it, you know, and it's kind of a feel good for yourself as well, for the participants, you know, who get involved. So I think it could become a destination, you know.
That people like responsible tourism. Yeah. That they would think, okay, this is a place I want to go and I want to show my kids how this thing can work and all of that.
Yeah, like if you were on holidays in a nice place, you'd like to give something back to the community, you know, if the people are friendly and you're enjoying yourself there, you'd like to get involved a little bit more. And that way, then you get to know the locals more, you know, than just dropping in for a night and taking off again the next day. So you get more feel for the community and for the country and for the culture and, you know, and you'll get to find out what's on in the area and everything. So I think it's something that will definitely grow.
Given that you have the Crean blood in your veins, Aileen, do you have the travel bug as well?
I have, yeah. Yeah, well, we closed down the brewery in January and February and we head away, myself and my husband. In fact, I met my husband, I was backpacking in Goa and met him in the beach hut. He was backpacking there as well.
So do you do that every year?
Yeah.
Where's the most exotic place you've gone to?
Oh, well, I suppose we met in Goa in India, and actually I cut my foot there in the water as well, and so when it recovered, then every day we pulled the blue bin to the end of the beach where the locals used to throw a load of bottles, and we'd fill up the bin and bring it back because it was nobody ever put anything in it. Well, maybe a few tourists, but, you know. So then again, the locals saw us doing this and they kind of, you know, so you can lead by example, you know.
So you're doing this thing that you're introducing in Kinmare. You've been doing this everywhere you go or some version of it.
Well, exactly. Because, you know, if you like the place you're staying, we like to give something back. So we're lucky enough. Well, I suppose we work 7 days a week when we come back, but we're lucky enough to be able to go away for 8 weeks at a time and like to give back something to the community.
I believe you are a bit accident prone on the holidays, not just the cut leg. tell us what happened when you tried to emulate your grandfather.
Yeah, where it was, Yeah, I wanted to get it. I was always intrigued by this grandfather who went to the Antarctic and three Antarctic expeditions. So then as I got closer to the centenary of the Shackleton expedition, I asked my two sons, did they want to come? And my husband was training with us, and we weren't married at the time. But anyway, so thank God he came with us. So we chartered a boat and we sailed 800 miles from the Falklands to South Georgia. Shackleton and Tom Crean, the rest of them sailed 800 miles in the Southern Ocean from Elephant Island to South Georgia. And when they were doing the traverse, they had to descend the Trident, and they had no map, they'd know nothing, and they just had a rope, so they coiled it up and descended 1,500 feet in minutes. Now, it took us all day to descend there. We had three ropes tied up and four pitches. And when we got to the end, the guides had, we had these two top climbers from the UK, and they had said, sit on your pult like your sledge and use it like a toboggan. So I saw one of the guides do it. I saw my little son, Kian, who's over 6 foot, put his feet down, slow down, whatever. So then it came to my turn. I said, no, it's a bit steep, I'll keep walking. But then someone shouted, toboggan out. So it was 100 years and pressure on. So I set up mine, but it started going really fast, and I said, I'm going to be thrown off this. So I put my foot down and unfortunately hit rock, smashed my fibula, tibia and plateau. And I didn't realise I broke anything. So then we had to camp out for two nights, and they had to manhaul me for 2 days, and it was 15 days before I got to Chile for my operation. So not the expedition I planned, and I was lucky my husband had to show the guide what to do, and he bandaged me up with a 1-inch bandage and showed him how to take off my ski boot. And yeah.
So, God, that must have been some 15 days, Aileen.
It was. not to be. Well, I am invited back with an all woman team December next year if it comes off it.
Are you going to go?
I don't know. Of course. It's unfinished family business.
Fair play to you, Aileen. And many, many others would say, well, I've done that bit now. I'm not going to repeat.
It's amazing, Cliff.
You're determined to go back and finish it.
Yeah. I'd love to. Yeah, I'd love the opportunity.
Okay, thanks for that, Aileen, and best of luck with that. But best of luck as well with this idea for the tourists and the Tidy Town Committee.
Super. Thanks very much, Kate.
Tom, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Tom, you're in West Limerick.
Yes.
What have you found picking up?
I live just on the outskirts of the village. It's in Athay in West Limerick. And we have a very good Tidy Towns group. And I usually gather any litter I find between my house and the village. Usually it's beer cans or plastic bottles or fast food wrappers, stuff like that. But one day, about 2 years ago, I saw a colourful box. And I stopped the car and picked it up. And it was a toilet seat.
A toilet seat.
And I thought it had fallen off a delivery truck or something. So I picked it up, and it wasn't sealed, and I opened it. And it was the old toilet seat, carefully put back in the box, the new one, and dumped on the side of the road.
So it was a used toilet seat?
Yes. Oh, God. Put into the box, the new one.
And thrown at the side of the road?
Yeah.
Charming.
Yeah, wasn't it? But they went to the trouble of wrapping it up the way it was and putting it in the box and just then dumped it on the roadside.
Yeah, you never, ever, ever know what you're going to find. That is for
sure. Full of surprises.
Full of surprises. Tom, thanks for that. Thanks, Mary and Aileen.
Okay, Katie.
Take care.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
We love you, and we will love you till And that is a little snatch of Something About You. That is a song that has featured in or does feature in the current season of the Netflix series Ginny and Georgia, which is, if you're not a teenager or you don't have a teenager in the house, you might not know. It is a massive show on Netflix at the moment. It's kind of the new Gilmore Girls. And that song was written by my next callers here, Michaela and Natalie. Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Delighted to talk to you girls. Fantastic. I mean, it must be incredible to hear your song or see your song featured in a huge show like Ginny and Georgia.
Yeah, it's insane. When we heard it was happening, we were like, oh my God, because it's a show we all watched and our parents watched. So.
Yeah, and like everyone watching it, it is incredible. So, Michaela, just to explain, there's three of you in the band called If. And what age were you when you wrote this song, Something About You?
We were 14 when we wrote the song. And yeah, there's three of us, Natalia, me and Melina.
And you were only 14 when you wrote that?
Yeah, 14. It's crazy to think about because it's 2 years now that we released it.
So take me back to it. Like, when did you get together as a band?
We got together maybe almost 3 years ago in our school. Our school, Athy College, we have a school band. So we all used to go to that. And it's just basically a place where we could all play music. And that's where a lot of us learned how to do our instruments and learned like our love for music. So we decided to become a band, and yeah, we've definitely had some amazing opportunities since then. But since we started, we had no idea that to think that our show is our song is in a show that we all used to watch is insane.
What is the song actually about?
The song is about my Nana. She was living with my family and I at around 3 years ago, and unfortunately passed away due to cancer. It hit me hard at the time, and I decided to write a song about it. And it really made me realize I had a love for songwriting. And it's good to find a way to express your feelings other than talking to people. And it's something people can relate to because loss is something, unfortunately, a lot of people deal with. And grief is a very universal experience.
Oh, and this is actually about your own Nana. And this is the song that has made you... That is such a lovely story, Michaela.
Yeah, it's very special to me to think that a song I wrote about someone so special is so, like, it made it into Netflix.
So you wrote the lyrics and the music, then did the three of you get together on that?
I wrote the piano and I wrote the lyrics, and then Natalia wrote the drums. Melina came up with the bass because at the time she was playing bass for the band. And then we used to have another girl in the band called Izzy who wrote the guitar.
And then when did the Netflix, when did that opportunity come up? Where did it come out of? How did Netflix come across your music?
When we first released the song, maybe around 2 years ago, I was delusional and I contacted like every single music supervising company that I could find. Just being like, hi, this is our song and like, if you're ever interested.
But who actually recorded your song with you, Michaela?
Our teacher, Mr. O'Donnell.
Oh. So does he have a recording studio, or how did you get it recorded?
We did it in, we recorded it in the school in a classroom.
Wow. So just something as simple as that. And you put it out there on social media, I presume, or?
Yeah, we released it onto Spotify and Apple Music and like everywhere you can hear a song, maybe like 2 years ago.
And was it immediately picked up on? Did it, you know, get traction right away?
I think we got a lot of local people were very like, they thought that it was really cool for a young band. But like, it didn't like pick up great at the start. Like we had a lot of support, but like, now that it's in the show, we've definitely had a lot. Our streams have went up, and like, it's crazy because our number one listeners are in America, and we're like, what?
And again, like when they got in touch with you, did you, was it a phone call? What was the contact?
We got emailed by a music supervising company in July last summer. They just said that they were interested in the song for a Netflix series and would like just basically asking if we were interested in all that. And obviously me being nosy, I asked what series it would be and they told me it was Ginny and Georgia. But we didn't actually find out it was confirmed in the show until 2 weeks prior to the release.
It must have been. I can't even imagine the excitement of hearing that.
It was insane. Oh my God. I got the email on the way to Newbridge with my mom in the car. And I could have had a heart attack. I was so excited because it's a show like I genuinely watched it like and I still watch it. And I was like, oh my God, because all my friends watch it. I was like, this is so cool.
So cool. Doesn't even come close to it, I think. Listen, I want people to hear it because it is a great song. Let's have a listen to it. And I want to chat to Natalia after this.
See.
that is Something About You. And I'm talking to Michaela and Natalia, who wrote that amazing song when they were just 14. That is just incredible. I mean, so congratulations. It is just so exciting. And we're talking about the when the script had their song picked up by in the Ghost Whisperer. That was the start of something really major for them. So what are you thinking? America, here we come.
Hopefully it picks up.
Natalia, you're behind the drums there.
Yeah.
Why the drums? What drew you to playing the drums?
I felt like I could have my own like space, my own imagination, kind of create my own things instead of following a specific way I should be played. And it kind of just meant more to me.
And who do you like? Who do you admire behind the drums? Who do you?
Dave Grohl. I'd say like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me, your own musical talent, I know, come from your mom. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And I know she's not with us anymore, but this is so important to you.
Yeah, it really is. Like, she had such a compassion for music, singing, all of instruments, bands and everything. And I kind of picked that up from her.
Yeah, I mean, she'd be so, so proud of what you've achieved already. And you're so young still. What class, what year are you in, Natalia?
I'm in TY going into fifth year now.
Right. And Michaela, where are you now?
I just finished fifth year, so I'm going into sixth year.
Ah, now. So this is your leaving cert year and your music career is taking off like a rocket. What are you going to do?
We'll see.
What, Natalia,
yeah.
are you firmly on the road to a music career, do you think?
I would love to do it. I think it'd be a really good thing to do, and it'd like a lot of imagination to it, creativity to it. I think it's something I'd love to do.
Yeah. And have you gigs coming up or?
Yeah, we have a gig on the 22nd of June in Soundhouse in Dublin, and you can get tickets on the soundhouse.ie.
Okay, that's a good plug. You're good at this, Natalia. That's the important thing. There's no point being good at music unless people know where to find you. Tell me, what does like behind, because I often do think about the people behind the drums and bands. Sometimes they get kind of forgotten about. Do you like not being in the limelight, or how does it feel to be behind the drums?
It doesn't have such a spotlight on me, so I wouldn't be too nervous about it or too like anxious about it or anything like that. And I feel like I can do my own thing and not like be like kind of judged by some people. But at the same time, I get enough credit as the girls do. And like, you know, it's very like, I'd like to think it's a really good thing. Like, I personally love it and I wouldn't change it for anything else.
And it's kind of considered more of a boys' instrument, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
The drums?
Yeah. And a lot of people at school didn't really think that, oh, a girl can really play the drums until, like, they heard the band and they heard how good it was getting, until they actually realised that girls can do it too.
Were you thinking, I'll show them?
Yeah.
Fair play to you. And that recording, Michaela, is that the original recording that was done by Mr. O'Donnell in the classroom?
Yeah, it is.
God.
A couple of years ago in a little classroom. I think we were in the summer, actually, and we were recording it, just about to go into summer.
It sounds really good.
Thank you. Mr. O'Donnell is really good at recording and mixing.
Mr. O'Donnell, fair play. Is he your music teacher?
No, he's an English teacher, actually. He doesn't teach either, any of us.
But he's obviously big into his music.
Big into his music. He runs the school band and he's so, oh my God, he loves music.
God, a Thai college sounds like a kind of school you'd all want to go to.
Yeah, it's great. It really is.
That is fantastic. Which episode is this featured in, if people want to find it on Netflix?
The song is in episode 9 of the show.
Do you know at what point does it come up?
I think it's around 37 minutes in. It's a scene with Zion and Simone. So
And what's it for? What does it do? Is it an emotional moment in the episode?
Yeah, it's quite an emotional moment in the episode. It kind of plays a bit in the background and they're talking over it.
And you're also on TikTok. I'm just trying to say, where can people check out any more of your music?
We're on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. Most of our stuff is kind of, if you search up If Band, it will come up. So we're pretty much on everything.
And people get an idea from it, from that one. But I mean, who would be your influences, musical influences?
Well, for me, I'm definitely really influenced by Fleetwood Mac. I absolutely love them and Stevie Nicks. I know me and Natalia both really like Inhaler, so a good Irish act to mention, and Fontaine's DC. So we kind of take a lot of inspiration, especially like female artists such as Kate Bush, because obviously we're girls. So
yeah, who doesn't love Kate Bush, in fairness?
Exactly.
Yeah, quite the range there, Michaela. Brilliant. Listen, hang on. I've got Carmel on the line. Carmel, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
You're as impressed as I am by these two, aren't you?
Oh, incredible. Carmel? I just wanted to ring. Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to ring in and congratulate the band. I just think it's fantastic that such a young band got such opportunity in school.
Isn't it brilliant?
Oh, fantastic.
Fantastic. Your own niece?
Yes, I have a niece and she's in a band as well, which started in school as well. She's in a band with three other girls, and Florence Road, they call themselves. That's where she went to school in Bray. And they're doing absolutely fantastic. They're in Marley Park this year with, I think it's supporting Olivia Rodriguez. Rodrigo, I don't know what her name is, but
it's Rodrigo. I'll tell you, this one person I definitely know the name of in my house. yes, that's a massive. That is one of the gigs of the summer, I think. Going to be. Yeah. So, God, that is incredible, Florence Road.
Yeah, and like that, they got the leg up, I suppose, in school. I don't know from there. Obviously, you know, they had people helping them along the way, but. It started in school, and it's great to hear another band that has got such a recognition now. I've been tuning in to episode 9 and 37 minutes in to have a listen to the song.
We all will, Carmen. What about that, Michaela? Florence Road, that's another band to aspire to now.
That's crazy. I love Florence Road.
Brilliant.
They're like, I seen their cover of an Olivia Rodrigo song, and that was what made me want to be in a band, so that's so cool.
That's amazing.
That is very cool. Michaela, Natalia, thank you so much. Well done. Congrats. That is so exciting, and I am looking forward for you when you're bigger than Kate Bush.
Thank you so much for having us.
Take care.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, from musical legends of the future, I have absolutely no doubt, what incredible girls, to the sad story of a legend that we lost yesterday, Brian Wilson. Fidelma, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Kate. How are you?
Great, Fidelma. You were a massive fan.
Oh, I was. I'm Harmony mad. So I think anybody who likes Harmony loves Brian Wilson. I mean, he was the king. He really was. I discovered him when I was about 14, I think, when I heard a song by the Beach Boys called Heroes and Villains. And it wouldn't have been one of their big hits. But, oh my God, the harmonies in it were just so complicated. They just blew my mind. And then I had the great privilege of hearing him actually perform that song live several times on his visit to Dublin. And again, mind-blowing, absolutely mind-blowing stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, he was, an absolute genius, obviously. A musical genius.
He was because, I mean, he had that gift where he could actually hear everything in his head before it was ever actually played. So when he was about 22 years of age, he invited all the top session musicians in LA into a studio to work on music with him. And they thought, you know, who is this guy telling us what to do? They'd never heard of him. They didn't know who he was. And what he was asking them to do was kind of bizarre. But they didn't realise until they heard it all put together that he knew exactly what he was doing. he, you know, they had no idea because they were just playing notes here and there. But he could hear the entire ensemble in his head. So he wasn't just a vocal harmony genius. He actually was a musical genius as well, because these instrumentalists were, you know, with bass guitar, you know, an ordinary rhythm section. He brought in glockenspiel, banjos, a thing called a terrapin, which he uses in Good Vibrations. You know, instruments that nobody else was using back then for pop songs. And he could hear the whole ensemble in his head and explain to everybody, all these hardened session musicians, with this young 22-year-old, he could tell them all what to do, explain it all to them, and it all came together. And they were absolutely stunned when they heard the whole thing together and realised he knew exactly what he was doing from the very start.
And he couldn't even read music at that stage himself.
No, no, he couldn't. It was all in his head. He could hear the whole thing in his head. So he actually was, I mean, I know the word genius maybe is bandied around a bit too much, but he was a genius. He was the Mozart of our time, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, he had obviously his personal life was, I suppose, trouble doesn't even begin to cover it really, in
yeah.
terms of, you know, his what happened with his father and his health and his mental health and all that over the years.
He had a really hard time. And in fact, I was only aware of all that much, much later on when I discovered, you know, his brother, Dennis Wilson, who was the youngest of them. He had a very, very difficult time with drugs and alcohol, and he died very young. And then his brother, Carl, unfortunately died with cancer. And the amazing thing was Brian would have been the least healthy of them all. And he outlived them all by many, many years. I mean, he got to 82. I don't think anybody would have predicted that back in the 70s when he was like he was going through a very difficult time again with drinking drugs himself. But he came through it and he kept composing, which was the amazing thing. I mean, he had songs literally pouring out of him and he carried on composing well into his 70s. So, I mean, it never stopped. The genius didn't stop.
And he toured well into his 70s as well, didn't he?
He did.
I mean, he would have done touring a lot on this side of the Atlantic.
Yeah, well, I saw him in Vicar Street. The last time I saw him was, it's only about 2 years ago, I think he was in Vicar Street. And I saw him in the Bord Gáis a few times. I saw him in the O3. I saw him over the Festival Hall in London. So that's all over the last 10 years. And, you know, you could see he wasn't well. He was frail in the latter concerts. You know, he didn't even walk on stage. He was just there at the keyboard. So he didn't move. He was
as they say in the business, he was found on stage.
Exactly. But he was surrounded by this incredible bunch of musicians called the Wonderments. Now, I think they may have been a band in their own right, kind of four or five piece, but they were augmented by other musicians. There were 10 of them, and every one of them could sing. And every one of them could play at least two instruments. So when he was on in his live gigs, you were looking at Brian in the middle, 10 musicians around him, and they could reproduce exactly the actual hit records where every harmony was covered, every instrument was played. And for somebody like me, I'm in the music business myself, and I know a bit about harmony. For somebody like me, like I actually thought I can die now, and just go to heaven, because I was just fascinated to hear and watch every single thing that was happening on that stage, the most complicated musicianship and vocals. I mean, you will never see a concert like it again. It's incredible.
I had exactly this conversation with a man who was sitting beside me and is sitting outside the glass here now.
Really?
Earlier, who had been at one of those concerts
yes.
in the last, you know, 10 or 15 years, and said that really extraordinary, like just the
yes.
the recreation of the sound, which was
yes.
and the level of talent from every single person on stage.
And to hear it live, like you're thinking these songs were hits in the 60s, and to be hearing them in the 2000s, done exactly as per the original record. Like you wouldn't think it was possible. And it took 10 people, in fairness, on stage with them to actually reproduce it. But they did it with aplomb.
And to be able to see it in a venue like Vicar Street, like a relatively small venue
yeah.
like that, must have been amazing.
Look, to be honest, the Bord Gáis ones were the best ones for me, because the sound was perfect. And I think I was in like row 5 and I examined everything up close, and I was just, the sound was incredible. It really was. Now, the Vicar Street one was great, but the Bord Gáis one for me was the best of them. And they were all brilliant. I mean, just, you'll never see the like again.
Yeah, exactly.
So sad day. But look, he hadn't been well for the last number of years, so it didn't come as a surprise to anybody who's kind of been following him. And, you know, he had a hard time, and I'm glad he's in a better place now, as they say.
Well, he's, as you say, left some incredible music behind him, that's for sure. Fidelma, yeah, thanks for that. Can I bring in Eric Moore now? Eric, good afternoon, Eric.
Hello again. We spoke not so long ago.
Eric, would you have always been a fan?
Yes, but the story that I had was actually in relation to my dad. My dad was in a band when he was only a teenager. They were a show band called Ravens. And I remember him telling me the first gig that they were already an established band. They were called Vic Mellows and the Ravens. And I remember his first gig was supporting the Searchers. And they played with Roy Orbison, and they actually opened for the Stones in the Dublin and Belfast gig. So they were quite well established. I think they were on that program, the Show Band Show and that. But he was used to the whole kind of gig thing going in, rehearsals and all that. And he sauntered into, was it the Adelphi or something? I can't remember, because he only told me the story about a year ago. He sauntered into the gig with one or two friends. No one said anything. It was different back then. And he hung around and his friends left. And by the time the gig started, he'd made his way backstage to the side of the stage, and he was standing at the curtain. And the people at the venue thought that he was with the Beach Boys. And the Beach Boys thought he worked at the venue. And he stood on stage with the Beach Boys at the side, at the curtain, for the whole gig. And the lads were playing away, and they kept turning to him and smiling all through the gig. And that was the best seat in the house. He only told me that about a year ago.
Wow. That is, it's a good story.
Yeah, I love it. I love the Beach Boys. I really, really do. We play a lot on Gold. And actually, every year, because Paul McCartney was born 2 days before Brian Wilson, excuse me, and for the last good few years on RT Gold, I'd always pitch the two against each other in a battle, play three songs from each, you know, and mix it up. But this Sunday will be different. It'll be more of a celebration. The battle is out the window now, out of respect, of course. You know, that's finished and done with. But I love Brian Wilson. He made his music, you could definitely say, Brian Wilson's music made the world a better place. Yeah. Easily. You know, beautiful music, very, very upbeat. You know, that's what we need in this world. So anyway, that's my tuppence worth.
If you had to pick, you know, you were to send somebody to the library, music library now, what would you ask them to come back with from Brian Wilson's massive collection?
Well, you know what? As a masterpiece for its time, I think Good Vibrations is the one. I mean, God Only Knows and all the beautiful songs. But for the time, Good Vibrations was just out of this world. I mean, it really, really was. And of course, there was always this ongoing battle with the Beatles and the Beach Boys to outdo each other, not only songwriting, but production-wise also. And that would have been a kind of a definite one-up for the Beach Boys, I believe, Good Vibrations.
Yeah, it's kind of, as you said, that Good Vibrations, all of those. It's very hard to listen to that and not smile.
Well, he had an album called Smile, so there you go. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He knew, and for a guy who suffered with depression, that's even more remarkable about the whole thing. You know, he was probably striving for happiness, I'm assuming. He was striving for happiness, and he had struggles. But by God, he certainly passed on the joy to other people, definitely his fans, you know. I mean, you just hear a Beach, no matter what genre, you could be a punk rocker. If a Beach Boy song comes on the radio, you're going to smile,
yeah.
You know. Or even be transported to a beach in your mind, and the whole surfing thing, you know, it definitely is good driving music for a car.
It's good vibrations, Eric.
it's
good vibes. Let's have a listen to a blast now. Don't Worry, Baby.
She looks in my eyes and breathes me, reminds me she's so good.
I'm reliably informed. Brian was only 21 when he wrote that. Amazing. Kevin, good afternoon.
Hello, Katie. How are you?
Yeah, Kevin, you probably could have told me that, I'd say. Could you?
I was a fan since the time my father used to play for, used to work for Lingus, and he bought things called vinyl.
Kevin, I'm going to stop you there because we will try and fix your line. I want people to be able to hear you properly. That line is letting us down a little bit there. Eric, just 21 years of age to be able to do that.
Come on, I was in awe before when you started talking about Brian Wilson and those young girls who, who are writing their own music at such a great young age. I mean, to come up with something like that, it reached number 24 in the Billboard Hot 100 of that year. That's huge. I mean, that's the early days of the Beatles. So they're really starting out. I mean, they're kind of the boy band thing is, you know, you're moving into adulthood at that point. That's just amazing music. But then again, I remember that Mick Jagger once said later in his life, it's hard to write a hit when you're subjected to the trials and tribulations that come with adulthood. There's a certain joy and naivety and innocence with youth, mm-hmm. and that's when you write your best stuff. So, do you know what I'm saying? So as he would have went older, it would have been more difficult to write those killer tunes. So those girls need to get writing as quick as they can, get a catalogue in there, you know.
The talent of those girls, in the context of what we were talking about, they are incredibly talented as well. Go back to Brian Wilson, though. The idea, and Fidelma was talking about it there, that he had this incredibly unusual brain, that he could actually hear the sound.
Yeah, sounds that probably didn't even exist before he heard them. So he would have been working in the studio trying to achieve that sound. Nowadays, we have keyboards that have, you know, presets and that. They would have been very limited with the tools they had back then, so they would have been trying to achieve certain sounds. And apparently he was meticulous and spent like weeks trying to get songs the way he heard them in his head, you know. And there's a fine line between genius and insanity, and I think most songwriters and musicians are a little bit just over that top, and that's when the creative juices flow, and that's what separates the hits from the misses. Simple as that, you know.
In the pantheon of the greats, where would you put him?
The Beatles are my number one. I think we spoke about this before. And I was pitching him against the Beatles. And when you put the catalogues side by side, I mean, the Beatles fare out better. They just had more hits and I don't know. Plus, there was a Beach Boys had a specific sound, but they would be in my top 10, even though they've only a limited amount of tracks that stand out for me. I think I could name 10 and that's it, faves. But there are 10 that... Oh, my God. I mean, when you compare them to the music of today, and we've got a lot of great music today, but a lot of it is very, very samey. To come out with that music at that time with a fresh sound like that, I mean, you've got to put it into perspective. Do you know what I'm saying? So it's like putting Led Zeppelin in. You can put them against Guns N' Roses and AC/DC and all that, but to be Led Zeppelin back when you started that Led Zeppelin, it's a whole different thing. So the Beach Boys, for their time, the production, amazing. Definitely in my top 10, I would say, definitely. Because it's a crowned 10.
It's a crowded...
Sly and Family Stone, by the way, I'm not jumping on the bandwagon, but Sly and Family Stone were always my number two. Always my number two. Just for their production. You know, they have been. I mean, I've been playing them on Gold and even before Gold for years, always, very, very frequently. Because Sly Stone was a genius of his own. He passed away the other day too. I was in a rap group when I was a teenager and we sampled Sly and the Family Stone. This was in the very, very early years of sampling. So we were like listening to all that kind of funk. At the time, it was hard to get, of course. Ireland being Ireland back in the 1980s is a different world, you know, so you had to seek this kind of stuff out. But I remember, I think it was 1989, Dave Fanning, 2FM, aired Woodstock in stereo on 2FM while RTE showed Woodstock on TV. And I recorded it, and I remember Sly and the Family Stone's performance, and it blew my mind, and that was it. I was absolutely hooked. That was 89, you know. But Brian Wilson,
and Sly Stone are the same. They're pretty much the same. They are guys who locked themselves in the studio and were just hell-bent on getting a particular sound, and they pioneered the sound as well.
I was just going to say, both of them unbelievably influential on everything that came after as well. Incredibly, yeah. We lost the two in the same in a matter of days apart. Yeah. Extraordinary. Hang on, Eric, because I think we might have Kevin back with us. Kevin, are you there now?
I am indeed. So I hope it's a little clearer.
It's much better. Thank you. And so we were talking, yeah, you're a huge Brian Wilson fan, Gavin.
Yes. I was just saying how I got involved, and my late father used to work for Aer Lingus and brought us home these things called LPs. They were vinyl to go around in circles, you know. And we never heard the sounds before because who were the Beach Boys? California Dreaming was far cry from 1960s Dublin, you know. But I followed them since then, moved through cassettes, and then I'm now on CDs, although it's streaming services people want you to go. But the Beach Boys were superb in that their harmonies were just so good. The point about it is Brian was a genius, but when he left the group, he couldn't tour anymore. He was replaced by Glenn Campbell, and that was a thing people forgot. And he was at home making the new LPs and CDs and all that kind of thing. I'd recommend his Brian Wilson CD, which is out from 1988, because on it is Love and Mercy, and that became the title of the movie, which sort of discussed his biography, his whole life, and that's very good. And if you haven't seen it, it gives you a feeling for what the man is about, and it's well worth seeing in that regard. And also, No Peer Pressure is another LP he brought out sometime later, and that has bonus tracks. That's much later in his career. So as a soloist, he was superb. As a group member and a mentor for the whole Beach Boys, he was just the pinnacle of artists.
Did you see him towards those later years, those gigs that Fidelma were talking
indeed,
about?
Indeed, yeah. It was, of course, the one thing you must remember about the Beach Boys is they sued each other. Every member of the Beach Boys, yeah. Three brothers, a cousin and their best friend, they sued each other in court to get ownership of the songs, and that was a bit strange, but they did reunite. Mike Love took them at Dublin. I saw him with Al Jardine, and probably in 2010, 2011. Brian Wilson himself toured separately but sang Beach Boys songs, and I saw him twice, if not three times. I just found a ticket a few minutes ago, fell out of my collection, and it's 2018. It was in the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre, so he was in top form, although, as has been commented, he wasn't in good form. He was kind of wheeled out and wheeled back, but he was as good as he could be on the music box, so to the piano. And I'd also recommend, when they reunited in 2012, I saw them in the Wembley Arena in London. 12,000 people went to see them. It was a magnificent concert, and all five people reunited. Of course, Dennis and Carl had by then, but Brian himself was in good form in those nights, you know?
Yeah. Great memories to have, I'm sure, now that we know we won't have them anymore.
Absolutely.
Kevin,
absolutely.
Thanks for that. Eric.
Thanks,
Katie. Thank you, Eric. We'll take a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now I'm going back down to Kerry and saying hello to John. John, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
John, tell us your story there. You farm down there in... where exactly is the farm, actually?
Right, I'm farming in Ballymacelligate, the northern part of Ballymacelligate there, on the edge of the Stax Mountains. So yeah, I'm farming here, and I suppose, you know, we're probably discussing here about the recent theft or the ongoing problems we're having in this area with thefts, you know.
Yeah, and I, you know, as I say, you won't be the first or last farmer to have something stolen from you, but I was really struck by what was taken in your case. So describe to me. So you were out, for a walk, and.
I was out just doing a bit of work on Sunday morning, working on the farm, moving the fences from one paddock to another. And when I went to the first paddock, I discovered that the fence was gone. I then proceeded to the second and the third paddock, and all three were actually taken in the one night.
And these are electric fences, are they?
These are battery fences, which you place in the field. 2 months ago, I had one taken from the farmyard, which is the main electric fence. It's simply targeting fences big time here at the moment. I've met a few more farmers who've actually suffered the same.
And these, I mean, well, one thing, they're not cheap, obviously, to be replacing them.
They're not cheap, but I suppose even the bigger factor, I suppose, when you take a fence like that, there's a ripple effect. And in this case, you're leaving your cattle are very vulnerable to wandering onto the public road. And we know what can be the consequences of that. So it's not only the fence, but you have the risk of a casualty happening to some member of the general public as a result of these kind of acts.
And just to explain to people what kind of fencing we're talking about.
These are, you know, generally people might see them as you drive along the road. You have a fence along by the edge of the road with insulators on it, and you have it connected either to a main in the farmyard, or it's connected to a mobile unit in the field, a battery. And it protects cattle from travelling onto the road. It protects cattle from travelling to the neighbours or for grazing paddocks individually. It serves all those purposes.
And I presume they're being stolen to be sold on to somebody else who needs fencing, basically. Is that the idea?
It probably is. Most likely it is. You can understand one being taken, somebody wanting a fence. But, I mean, when they're being stolen in big numbers like this, there is obviously a market out there for them somewhere.
Yeah.
And well, I suppose that would seem to be the way.
That's the question, of course. If you are offered an electric fence from an odd source, ask yourself whose farm might have been on in the first place.
Exactly, if the price is good, yeah.
Yeah,
if
it's too good to be true.
Good.
Yeah, it generally is. Isn't that the story? Tell me your own background, though, because a lot of people will know you because you maintained a lot of the walkways down there.
Yeah, I suppose back in 2008, I got involved here, which there was an opening to create a walkway in Kerry. In this part, north part of Kerry. I got involved and I suppose, you know, we went through all the various, jumped through all the hoops and all that, and we eventually got one set up here in Ballymacallaghan in a place called Glenaginty. So we have a walk here since 2008. It's been, I suppose, a work in progress ever since. Numbers are good. We're at peak. We're putting through about 1,000 people a week here. And you've three loops. The longest is 10K. And you have a lot of history attached to this area as well. So you have something for everybody, something for the historian, you have something for the school tours, and you have the type of terrain which a lot of people use for training, for triathlons and general athletics as well, you know.
And you have used this terrain yourself for marathon running.
I would have used these trails going way back before there was any trail here, actually, before there was any official trail here. I would have used this landscape quite a lot for my own training for mountain racing and for road racing back through the years, you know.
How did you get into that, John?
I suppose, look, I had a massive love for the mountains all my life, and a great love for the outdoors. And I suppose I started off with road racing and track and cross country. You know, I did all of them up through the ranks. Then discovered the joys of mountain running. It was a growing sport in Ireland at the time, and Ireland was sending a team to the World Championships. And they asked me, would I be interested in competing on the Irish team? And sure, look, once I did the first race, I was hooked on it, really, you know.
And that's where you try. I mean, when I think about it, I'd be delighted with myself if I managed to stroll up one of those mountain trails. So you actually run up and down them.
Yeah, there's races on them, like Seth Caron Toole and Brandon and all the bigger ones, even Mangerton there as well in Killary. So, you know, there's races on those each year, and people just go out and, you know, some are competing against other individuals, some are competing against the time they ran last year, competing against themselves. You know, there's something for everybody in it, you know.
Yeah. John, just going back to the fencing and that issue. Basically, we just want to put the word out there that this is a danger now. This is an issue for you, and you know, not to be creating a second market for these.
It is, yeah. And look, you know, I know a number of people are asking me, did I get my fences back? That's not going to happen. Or very unlikely that's going to happen. But we want to discourage it happening again. We want to make the public aware, just as you said, of you know, being careful buying these fences at a too good to be true price. Because if the market dries up for them, then there won't be the demand for them, you know.
Yeah.
And I want, you know, thank as well that there was four people donated fences to me because of what happened, and I want to thank those people and thank the generosity of the public how they have worked with me since it happened.
Okay, great. Yeah, it's great. You do find the good side of people as well when these things happen. John, the best of luck to you. Thanks for that. We'll have to take a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now we are close to the hour, to the top of the hour, but I want to go to Joe. Joe, good afternoon.
Hello, Katie. Thank you for taking the call.
The reason
I wanted to put the call through, Katie, was I'm so pleased and delighted that you're paying this tribute to Brian Wilson and the Beatles. Sorry, Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys. They had to compete with the Beatles and with the Rolling Stones, and yet they're still up there with one of the greatest groups of all time.
Tell us very quickly, Joe, about the first time you saw them.
I was born in Limerick, 1968. First time I left Limerick on my own, I took the train to Dublin to go to the Gaiety Theatre where the Beach Boys were playing. One of your previous contributors, I think, mentioned the Bord Gáis Theatre. That wasn't there at the time. The event was in the Gaiety Theatre. Brian Wilson was going through a very bad time at that moment. He was actually wheeled onto the stage in a wheelchair, sat at the piano, but it didn't interfere with the incredible concert that lasted for 2.5 hours back in 1968.
Not today or yesterday, but you still remember every minute of it.
Oh, every minute of it. The Beach Boys were the wallpaper to my teenage years and my young years.
Brilliant. What's your favourite one?
It's one of their not best-known songs. It's called In My Room. It's a slow, melodic, four beats to the bar that Brian Wilson composed. And I still play it very, very regularly because it brings me back to all those great years. In fact, when people talk about Phil Spector and his wall of sound in the 1980s and 1990s, Brian Wilson had his own wall of sound in 1967 with Wouldn't It Be Nice? The third beat of the four-bar opening brings in his wall of sound, which predated Phil Spector's wall of sound.
Indeed it does, Joe. Thank you for that. I think we're all going to go home and put on a bit of Brian Wilson now and the Beach Boys. But that's all we have time for today. Niall McGonigal was on sound. Our broadcast coordinator was Stephen Higgins. Research was by Richie Byrne and Rachel Graham produced. Jeanette Egan is the series producer. Stay tuned now for Ray Darcy.